I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is sponsored by Grand Army, a neighborhood restaurant and bar in Borough Hill, Brooklyn. Visit GrandArmyBar.com or at Grand Army Bar on Instagram and Twitter.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izett.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your hosts of this weekly show on all things fermenting.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Happy Halloween, everybody.
We're feeling really spooky today. We're all in costume, even though you can't see us. We could be making it up, but we're not.
They're definitely not. They're both scaring the shit out of me. I'll tell you what. But so is this show, because we're talking about all sorts of freaky ferments and our experience with things. But before we get into that, there are some events happening in the very near future that we would like to shout out. Among them, from one of our episodes, Derek Dillinger, the Fermented Man, author of The Fermented Man. He is hitting Bitter and Esters on November 10th at 6:30 p.m. He's going to talk about all sorts of different things, do some readings, talk about fermentation, and sign copies of his book, which will be there for sale. Go to bitternesters.com to find out more information on that. Shortly thereafter, on Saturday, November 19th, there's Brew for a Cure, put on by our friends, Brian Pope, Pope Wagon Brewing Company. He and his friend, I forgot the other part of Brian. Of Pope Wagon. Anyway, you're putting on Brew for a Cure. It's going to be awesome. There, it's to raise money for St. Jude Children's Cancer Research Hospital. There'll be homebrew from 1 to 5 p.m. It's at Transfiguration Parish Hall, 64-14 Clinton Avenue in Maspeth, New York. And you can find information on that at Eventbrite Brew for a Cure. Look up November 19th. Tickets are $20 to $40. A lot of really good stuff. I'll be there with Fifth Hammer serving up some pilot batches of stuff, so we're excited about that. And then after that, what do we have going on? December 1st is the next trolley ride with Kelly and I. We're going to...
You're doing it again?
We're doing it again. We're going to the outer limits of Queens. We're going to go and we're going to hit LIC Beer Project, Finback, Bridge and Tunnel, and Single Cut. So you can go to kelsobeer.com and find some information on that. But actually preceding all of this, this Saturday is Learn to Homebrew Day from the American Homebrewers Association. It was established by the AHA in 1999 to encourage homebrewers to introduce their non-brewer friends and family to the most rewarding hobby, obsession, and lifestyle since the beginning of time. I think we can all attest to that because homebrewing is awesome.
And I'm going to mention actually that this Sunday, November 6th, Josh Bernstein, author extraordinaire, who just came out with his newest book, The Complete Book of IPA, is having a can jam at, I believe it's at Threes. Let me look. I'm looking at the poster right now. Yeah, and the cool thing is, so he's going to have his Complete IPA available for purchase and signing. He's going to have some special book and can packs, and he's going to have super fresh canned IPAs from 11 of the area's best IPA breweries, including Grimm, Greenpoint Beer and Ale, Innerborough, Gun Hill, LIC Beer Project, KCBC, Finback, Other Half, Threes Brewing, Evil Twin, and Stillwater. And you know if you live here that most of these cans you can't buy in the store. You have to go to the brewery. So if you don't want to cross, you know, four boroughs on a certain day and wait in line for these cans.
Things, yeah.
This is your this is your chance this Sunday, November 6th, 12 to 5 p.m. IPA Can Jam at Threes Brewing. And it is there's no entrance fee. It's pay as you go.
Can you dig it?
Yeah.
I can dig it. Well, that brings me to the following weekend. If you're out in Long Island, Spider Bite is having their 5th year anniversary, and I did a collaboration with them in honor of Thanksgiving and fall sours. So Fifth Hammer, we did a cranberry tart beer, which is super cool. So we threw cranberry puree and sweet cherry puree into a tart kind of blonde base, and it is cranking. It is beautiful. They're going to have 20 beers available all throughout the afternoon into evening, Saturday, November 12th. And that's all the information on events that I have currently. Anybody else?
No, I had my successful kombucha workshop.
Hey, how'd it go?
It went really well. I still have a lot of SCOBY left over. Everyone was just kind of like, what is that? I'm like, this is what you're here for. It's a SCOBY.
SCOBY. So I was talking to Dave. You know, we put a shout out to, like, what are the scariest things about fermentation that you have out there?
Oh, yes.
And I asked my partner, Dave Sharfstein of Fifth Hammer, and his first introduction to SCOBY was with Mary in Portland at the Craft Brewers Conference, and he was like, what is that? And that was like a scary gelatinous thing. So for him, his answer was, SCOBY, what is it? Why is it? How is that friendly at all? I think SCOBYs are alive, and they're going to take over the world one day, I'm pretty
but
sure.
I did expose him to like a 10-gallon crock of SCOBYs at a kombuchery in Portland, Oregon. It was a great kombuchery, and actually I think you met up with us there. So Dave and I got there. We got to check out the kombuchery, and there was also a cafe and a little store attached, so we actually sat down and drank the kombucha, and Dave really enjoyed
it.
Loved
the outcome,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I think actually we drank it before we went and saw the kombuchery and the scary SCOBYs.
Oh, yeah, I think he appreciated that because he doesn't think his mind would have been able to get over the matter of what he saw with which he could have enjoyed the beverage.
I feel like most people's introductions to like kombucha was someone making it like in the kitchen, and they're like, I think your tea went bad. Like, what is happening here? And speaking of scary ferments, as Chris mentioned, we put out a shout out on both Twitter and Facebook and asked our friends about what fermentations scare them. A lot of fermentations are kind of weird looking. We're not just talking like beer, cider, or anything like that. I have some interesting answers. My old roommate said that anything that self-replicates scares her because it just proves that it's alive and it's going to take over the world. My new roommate flipped through Sandra Katz's book and was like, tempeh looks weird. I'm going to pick tempeh. And I myself am kind of scared about not eating tempeh, but making tempeh because it's a mold that you have to cultivate, and I'm always a little nervous that I'm going to give myself food poisoning. And we had some answers from Cheryl Passwater. She said natto, even though she seems to like it a lot.
I'm with her on this.
It's scary, yeah. And she also said something called takuan, which she said looks like a dead rat buried in the sand.
Ooh,
I have never heard of this one.
I know, we're going to have to look it up. We have to get on the Google.
How do you spell takuan?
T-A-K-U-A-N.
Uh-huh.
Takuan.
And it looks like a dead rat buried in the sand.
Yeah, something like that. And also, from speaking of Derek Dellinger, in his book, he actually cites the one thing over his year of eating fermented foods that he disliked and what terrified him. I'm actually going to read the passage. Before tackling century eggs, I don't think I would have described anything I consumed as outright terrifying. He talks about how the outside of the egg looks kind of cool and is kind of marbleized, but then they have to crack it open. He says, within lies the true horror, the yolk. My God, the yolk. The pus-green, mucus-like corpse of a yolk at the center of the century egg will haunt you. It is the sort of sight that would inspire H.P. Lovecraft to retreat to a cabin and feverishly pen volumes of cosmic horror. Tentacled, loathsome elder gods would hatch from an egg that looks like that.
So, basically, bring him some of these century eggs on November 10th to Bitter Nestors, and he will thank you for it.
Apparently, you can buy them in Chinatown.
Yeah. You can. I've seen them. I will say, though, this is not exactly fermentation related, but what did I make the other day that we had leftover egg yolks?
You made
those muffins. I made these super healthy muffins to put in the freezer so that we have something to eat in the morning when we're in a hurry. And so we had four leftover egg yolks, so I Googled what I do with egg yolks. And actually, there's whole websites that have charts that say, hey, if you have one egg yolk left, you can, you know, with links to these recipes, two egg yolks, three eggs, etc. Anyway, so I went through all of them. I decided I didn't really want to make creme brulee or pudding or a variety of other things. But I came across a recipe for cured egg yolks. And it's not, I don't know if there's anything actually fermenting in there, but you're basically, you take your egg yolks, you mix... you can use anywhere from 100% salt to a mixture of sugar and salt with a little bit more salt or up to equal salt and sugar. I think I used a little bit more salt than sugar. So you lay that down in a bed in a container with, you know, slightly higher walls than your egg yolks are high. Place your egg yolks in there and then cover them with the rest of the mixture. Then you put it in the fridge and you cure them. And you can cure them, I think, anywhere from 4 to 30 days, depending on what texture you want. And then they turn into kind of a Parmesan cheese texture, and you can grate them for, you know, a good addition to, they work really well on like pasta, on salads, on all kind, you know, something where you want something rich and tasty. Anyway,
have you ever had
still 99 years short of
yes, exactly. We're not, I'm not going that far, but this might, you know, this is an easy way, and it's something I personally have never done. There's a lot of recipes using them and people say they're delicious, so I'm really looking forward to trying them.
I'm still skeptical.
Yes, Chris is very skeptical. I'm not even going to tell you I'm going to use them. We're just going to eat just something, have, and yeah, you're going to be like, man, why is this so delicious?
Mm-hmm. Because it was made with love. I'm pretty sure most of the stuff in our house. We put it out on Facebook as well, and our friend Jimmy Valm, who's now with Cape May Brewing Company, formerly with Brooklyn and some other people before there, he is scared of low original gravity fermentations. They always leave him a bit uneasy. It's too easy to over-attenuate and end up with a thin beer. And I feel him on that.
I agree. Also, I'll confess, I really like to make low alcohol stuff, but sometimes I don't carry through with it. And I actually made a nettle beer earlier this year, and I left it, and it did get mildew on the top, I think because it was such low alcohol.
Yeah.
But did it over-attenuate?
I don't know, because I got to be honest, I drain-poured it.
Fair enough. But I think a lot of times when we're making these short ferments, we have with low ABV ferments, if we get busy and we're not able to catch it at exactly the right time, they'll end up over attenuating, and we haven't played enough with back sweetening some of these.
Right. My thing, and kind of was my whole philosophy of this, that the book that I wrote, Speed Brewing, that came out, is basically I like these really fresh fermentations, low alcohol beverages that are made from anything from barley to apple juice to sugar to honey to other any kind of sugar source. But the key is you want to package them. Usually I use kegs. We have these great 1.75 gallon kegs. But you know, you want to package them and let them condition naturally or force carbonate them and then drink them quick. I mean, that's the whole philosophy of these fresh, you know, really nice low alcohol ferments. But yes, that is the biggest fear, is letting them go too dry. Right. Because even I did a bunch of experiments with back sweetening when I was writing the book, and I think the flavor of your fresh honey or fresh apple juice that you're adding back in to sweeten just isn't, it doesn't always complete the, I don't think it necessarily adds to the fermentation. I think it can actually draw away from it. It sometimes is a little bit harsh because it's too fresh and sweet because it hasn't been fermented at all. My preferential thing to do, if you have something that you fermented that goes too dry, even if it's like a regular strength cider or mead or something like that, my preference is to brew a smaller batch and then, you know, don't let that ferment all the way out and blend the two. So that you're blending an actively fermenting batch of whatever you made that went too dry. So that's my preference, is, you know, make a small batch, especially if you're doing these fast, you know, speed brews, these brews that take, you know, a week or two. It's really easy to brew another smaller batch and then blend them back. And I think you get a better result from that. So that's what I prefer to do, if you have time.
Here. Speaking of time, we're going to take a really quick break and be right back with Freaky Things on Ferment About It.
This episode is sponsored by Grand Army, a neighborhood restaurant and bar in Borum Hill, Brooklyn. Grand Army is a nice place to drink cocktails, slurp local oysters, and eat seasonally. We're open 7 days a week for dinner, and Saturday and Sunday we open a little bit earlier for brunch at noon o'clock. We're very, very happy to support Heritage Radio Network, just as Heritage Radio Network supports Grand Army. It's all about community, and that's how we feel about the radio and the bar. Visit GrandArmyBar.com or at Grand Army Bar on Instagram and Twitter.
Welcome back to The Men About It at HeritageRangerNetwork.org.
We're having a spooky evening of freaky ferments.
I will say that, so we're at, the studio is in kind of the, what, the back, but really the middle. We're between the restaurant the and the backyard in a shipping container in Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick.
Took 61 more.
And they're having a special Halloween double feature outdoor movie in the backyard. So we have this...
It's, I don't know if you can hear it, but we hear
we
it.
We can hear it and feel it, yeah. Head. I think they're playing Night of the Living
they're
Dead first
the
and then Halloween second.
Second Night of the Living Dead, Return of the Living Dead.
But it's very interesting.
We can just hear people getting murdered in the background. So it's kind of weird.
I want to say a couple things just real quick before we go into the rest of this show. We did last week or a couple weeks ago when we interviewed Sandor Katz and talked about, you know, what he thought were freaky. You know, he was really great and was like, you know, you shouldn't be scared of fermentation. It's hard to go wrong. We've been fermenting for thousands of years, and don't be scared of fermentation.
And then he was like, Natto.
And then, yeah, Natto, be scared of Natto. Exactly.
I just got a text from my mom. She said she's listening to the show. She says, does that mean we can pitch that stuff you left in the basement fridge over 2 years ago? Will it explode? So,
is that your century egg in the basement there?
So I took a couple weeks off to take care. My dad had surgery a couple years ago, and I took a couple weeks off and went down to my parents to, you know, spend time. I cooked for them, and one of the first things that I did when I got there is I went out and got some stuff to do some ferments with, short ferments. So yes, Mom, you can pitch those. They won't explode because they're all in plastic.
But the most advisable thing going back to the thing would be to blend that with a new fresh batch,
yes.
And then you can get them drinkable.
Yes, but I will warn you, Mom, so if you have old ferments, this is also occurs in our household, and you have, so all of these are in plastic. I actually just use reused soda bottles. I didn't take any bottles with me. I took a little bit of yeast, some airlocks, some yeast nutrient, and I think that's all and a little bit of star sand down there with me in a little quart Ziploc bag.
The traditional portable fermentation pouch.
Yeah, and then I just went through their recycling bin, and I got some plastic bottles, and I actually fermented everything in there. So if you do toss those, Mom, just open them a teeny bit because they probably are over. Even though they've been in the fridge the whole time, they are over fermented, and they probably will gush. So I would just open a little bit, you know, let it ooze out, and then slowly, you know, open over time until it's
like,
all gone.
Like a seltzer bottle that's been left out on the counter and is warm, and that CO2 wants to escape. Just open it up a little bit.
For years.
And hi, Sue. Thanks for listening.
So what's the other comment that we got on Facebook?
Oh, on Facebook. John Edstrom, he's using WLP 655 Belgian Sour Mix for the first time, but just for the heck of it, he tossed in WLP 650 Brettanomyces bruxellensis in his Belgian triple. He's scared what's going to happen. He really doesn't know. It's going to get delicious, I'm pretty sure. It's going to be fine. That Brett is going to eat a lot of interesting sugars. It's going to become very dry. But it's gonna. You give it time and try it. Try it over the time period. Let that Brett Brux do its thing. It's not gonna be fast. Keep it in a relatively ambient temperature for continuing fermentation, and it'll be great.
Yes. Good luck, and we'd love to hear how it worked, how it turns out.
Mm-hmm. I believe in Brett Brux. That's my T-shirt.
I do too.
Well, speaking of the things that we have left in our apartments, Mary and I both made some. Kind of candy-inspired ferments for Halloween this evening. What do you got for us?
So I did not. I did actually buy some candy, and then I didn't make it, but I made the seasonal cider instead, which I can talk about. But since you brought this up, I was going to say Erica Lane, who I believe is in California, who I met on Facebook, she had purchased my book, and she was making short meads and other beverages, and she made a Swedish fish short mead last year that looked great. So here's how she made it. She did 1.25 pounds honey per gallon. That is typically what I use in my short meads as well. She fermented it for 4 to 7 days. She added the Swedish fish. Then she let it ferment for another couple days. She chilled, kegged, carbonated, and drank it. She said it's super light. The fish ferment out and leave it feeling like a dry soda with a nice burst of red fish flavor and bubbles, lots of bubbles, so many bubbles. So I actually got a bag of Swedish fish and then didn't end up making it, but I am still continually to be inspired, and I will make this Swedish fish short meat eventually. What did you do, Rachel?
I hope it's better than that Skittle cider I made a few months ago. I like specially ordered Skittles from England and then realized that American Skittles haven't had gelatin in them for a couple of years. But that was a mistake. Don't do it. It tastes so cloyingly sweet, and yet it has no sugar in it. But for
when did you add the Skittles?
Oh, God. I added the Skittles, like, immediately.
At the beginning. So you fermented out the whole time.
Yeah. And it started bright green, and then it got cider colored, which was kind of weird.
Yeah, like the green got eaten.
Yeah, I separated out the colors also so you would actually get the flavor. Maybe like the strawberry one would have tasted better, but I started with lime. It was awful. It was like definitely tasted like Skittles though.
But do you believe that you could get it? Oh, it definitely tasted like Skittles.
Oh, it 100% tasted
sound
like
awful
Skittles
to me at all.
It was just very cloying.
Okay.
It was not a good idea. I probably still have some in the fridge if you guys want to try it.
Throw some bread brux in it.
Oh, that might work. Yeah, maybe if I age it long enough. But for tonight, I brought this candy corn kefir. I was trying to figure out something to do with candy corn because, like, any other candies are like kind of year round, but candy corn is like that gross thing you only get once a year.
It's not gross.
So I made kefir.
Love
it was like
corn.
A day and a half ferment.
So this is milk kefir.
Yeah, this is milk kefir. Yeah, or kefir.
That's
I know. It's okay. I think you can pronounce it both ways.
I've heard it both ways in the same sentence. So I made some like day and a half ferment in like my 70 degree apartment. And then I separated out the grains, and then I put in, I think, 4 or 5 pieces of candy corn, and it's like a pint jar. No, it's like a half a pint jar.
All right, I'm willing to taste it.
Yeah, and then it pretty much immediately dissolved, and I put it in the fridge. So
it is orange. It's like a...
It's the color
like
of
orange,
candy
it's
corn.
It's an orange cream.
It looks like a creamsicle
yeah,
color.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So I also tried to make a Reese's peanut butter cup one, but... Oh, it's very thick. But the Reese's peanut butter cup one... immediately dissolved and curdled. I don't know what happened there because I've blended like Reese's with kefir before and it tastes good, but I think it just didn't want to sit there. How does it taste?
So I don't drink milk kefir that much. Actually, it's pretty good. It's not bad. Huh. There are some weird notes to it. I'm going to be honest.
That smells like the apple pie cider.
Cider that we had in our glasses before.
All right.
Well, it's
you know, it just tastes like milk kefir.
Yeah, it's milk kefir yogurt.
It has
sour,
a little
tart.
Bit of like, yeah, under. I don't drink milk kefir that much though. I eat yogurt more.
It doesn't taste like candy corn at all.
Mm-mm. But the color's nice.
It did definitely color the candy corn, the milk kefir. That's too bad.
I was going to mention I've done. I went through a candy. I've gone through a couple candy making phase. My grandma. Fleming used to make candy a lot, so I was inspired by her.
Skipping came out good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And I did some gummy candies from made with homebrew porter that I had done a couple years ago. So I have the recipe in front of me, except I just realized that I didn't put the exact sugar. But I think that's something kind of cool that you can do with your homebrew is make some gummy candies. Let's see, reduced 12 ounces of porter to 2 ounces by simmering it to thicken it. I added a tablespoon water and a tablespoon gelatin. Sugar, this is where I didn't mention how much sugar. And then I ended up adding more water and gelatin. So I think I abandoned it after. I did make it. They
so
were
you didn't
really
say
good
how much sugar, but would you say there's a consistency that would tell you?
Yeah, kind of? And the thing is that I think they... It was a couple years ago, but they turned out really well. I got some gummy spider molds, which worked out really well. But that was something fun to experiment with. The other thing I like to do with beer...
If you want to make gummy worms, you can do that with straws.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw this the other day. You take a bunch of straws and you pour through the top, and then to get them out of the straw, you kind of use a spoon. Once they settle form.
Yeah, they harden, they firm up.
Firm up, then you just kind of rub the side and kind of squeeze it out as a gummy worm. That's what I
said. I do that with Jell-O when I was like five.
The other thing I like, other candy I like to make with beer is caramels. So again, I always, you know, simmer it to decarbonate it and then thicken it a little bit. And then you can just sub that for some of the liquid in your caramels.
Oh, and when, so another thing that you can do with candy is pair it up with beer. For example, the Well here in Bushwick, or is it Williamsburg? The Well, the bar, the Well always does a beer and cupcake pairing.
Depends on who you're talking to.
But there's also all sorts of pairings you can do with candy. For example, you can pair candy corn, because everyone loves candy corn, right?
Candy corn
with a wit beer, and Reese's with something like a chocolate stout, Twizzlers with like a Pilsner, Snickers with like a brown ale, Sour Patch Kids with an India Pale Ale. There's all sorts of like cool candy pairings that you can find online.
You can also, but the most fun to do is to do them yourselves, because the palettes are like fingerprints, and you have your own. Everybody likes their own things, but there are, you can certainly find good guidelines for that. You know, you can go color and just impact and audacity and bracing. Like strong flavors go with stronger beers and things of the like. Dark beers, chocolate will go with brown malty kind of beers, and if you want some cloying sweet. And to pair harmoniously, take sweeter beers with sweeter things. If you want to be contrasting, then get lighter beers and wash your mouth out of the Snickers.
Yeah, this one says peanut butter cups with Oktoberfest. That actually sounds really good.
I'd say any kind of like butter. A brown ale would be nice too.
Yeah,
as long as you kept it like not so hoppy.
I don't know. I think so. That's one of those places where, you know, a good hoppy brown ale, like sometimes the fruity notes of those hops can like be really nice with the chocolate. I love orange chocolate or like chocolate with orange and salt kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if you have like a nice citrusy hop, like the beer that with the brown ale that we had, by the way, Benjamin and Danielle, you are on your trip right now going to Portland. You thank you for all that you did for the New York City community. You're going away party at Strong Rope Brewing Company. We had a brown ale that you guys made called Escape New York, and it was a hoppy brown ale, and it was awesome. It had a lot of citrus notes on top, but you had a nice chocolate and a sweet nutty brown chocolate thing underneath, and that is awesome. With chocolate, I think. I can imagine that one being very good.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing. So, yeah, if you're trick-or-treating yourself, or your kids are trick-or-treating, or you just bought yourself a bag of candy at Duane Reade because they were on sale, you just experiment at home. Pair up these candies with anything you got lying around your house. See what works for you.
That's right.
Have a candy beer party.
Darn or tootin'. So it's Halloween right now, but that means tomorrow is November 1st, and it's fall, and we're getting close to Thanksgiving. All sorts of flavors remind me of Thanksgiving, especially the ciders that Mary Isette made last week.
Oh, yeah.
So
here to talk more about that, Mary Isette.
So I made a couple of ciders for an event that I did yesterday to sample to people. And we are currently in a New York State apple shortage this season because of weather conditions, I guess, this year. Anyway, so I did use my favorite grocery store apple juice, Costco apple juice.
Kirkland,
yeah, which is 100% apple juice, no preservatives, and very affordable. So I used that. On Tuesday, I made my ciders, so I added a little bit of yeast nutrient. I used the yellow packet of... I think it's of the champagne yeast from Red Star. I think it's a cuvee, but I'll have to look at the package. It's the yellow one, not the blue one. Anyway.
Is that also the white wine yeast? Well, yeah, it's the same thing. White.
No, it's a champagne yeast.
It was a champagne yeast.
But, and I actually, because I knew, you know, it was Tuesday, I needed to serve this on Sunday, I diluted a little bit down, so I started with 1036 OG. I stuck it in a plastic bin. I did... two-gallon buckets, and then a little bit left over in a half-gallon mason jar.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was quite chilly in New York City. We currently have no heat in our apartment, although we're getting it soon. Anyway,
you say soon.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I put them in a plastic bin. I put our sous vide stick. Sous vide stick is basically a heat stick that also helps... what am I trying to say?
Circulate
the water. So anyway, it keeps the water bath at, you know, an exact temperature. So I fermented them either, I think, 73 degrees. Mm-hmm. I think I started at like 72 and then turned it up to 73 the next day. So they fermented down to about 1010, by Saturday. So Saturday, we got him out. We took readings, gravity readings, as well as tasted. They tasted nice and like the perfect balance between sweetness, tartness,
absolutely,
and dryness.
Absolutely, and it could have gone the other way because this was a low, low OG ferment that Jimmy Lyons would, or Jimmy Vallon would be scared of.
Although cider is very different than beer in that way.
But still, you can still over attenuate.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Anyway, so I wanted to do some seasonal ciders. They did not have fresh cranberries yet at the store when I checked, but Chris happened to find this tea that I bought at a grocery store in Greenpoint, here in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, that predominantly carries Polish products. So I bought this bag of cranberry tea for $1.79.
And nothing on this case is in English, but there are pictures of cranberries and cherries.
Yeah,
and
there was an English label on the top, which we actually cut out. Yeah. So it has cranberry fruit, hibiscus flower, chokeberry fruit, apple fruit, chokeberry juice, concentrate, and a couple other things. Citric acid, a little bit of citric acid. So I added two bags of that into 2 gallons. We cold crashed it overnight, and then we kegged it the next morning and force carbonated it. The other one, I added 2 bags of Trader Joe's Harvest Blend Herbal Tea. So if you're not lucky enough, I think Trader Joe's still carries this. I'd actually fermented with this and was not happy with it because my ferments got really phenolic, I think because of the cinnamon in it. I don't know. I have a hard time fermenting cinnamon.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah. Especially necessarily in beer, but in like cider and sugar based.
Anything
and
lighter, meat. Cinnamon kind of takes it over.
Yeah. And it does something weird. It produces a lot of phenolics, yes. I think, when it ferments. So anyway, but I tossed 2 of these in. We tossed 2 of these in to the 2-gallon bucket. So again, 2 tea bags.
And what's in this one again?
This one has cinnamon, ginger, hibiscus, natural cinnamon, apple flavors with other natural flavors, chamomile, roasted chicory, and orange peel. So it's basically a spiced herbal tea. So if you don't have a Trader Joe's near you, you know, look for a tea similar to this. So when we tasted them the next day before we kegged them, we were actually really pleasantly surprised. The cranberry, I would have used 3 of these cranberry tea bags instead of 2. It was on the lighter side, although quite nice. But the Harvest Blend herbal tea, actually, man, it tastes like an apple pie cider. It's freaking delicious.
When you smell the bag, it smells like mulled wine or like the spices from mulled wine. But the way it played with the apple, with the apple cider, it turned into like an apple pie kind of thing. It is awesome in a way.
Yeah, it's really, really delicious and super easy. I generally don't like spiced ciders in particular. And they're kind of a pain to make because you have to, you know, carefully choose your spices. It depends how old they are. But, man, this tea is definitely the shortcut, and I will be making this cider again. So everybody that's tasted them has been very impressed with them, and I would highly recommend. These are 2 really nice ciders to make for fall. If you cannot find a cranberry tea, I think a cranberry tea is a great way to do it. If you can't, you can also add cranberry juice. Just be careful there's no sorbates in it that can prevent or slow fermentation or just mess with your fermentation. The other thing you could do is I've simmered down fresh cranberries and used it as well.
You could. But certainly the cost-effective option is these tea bags.
I mean, and they're just awesome, so easy.
And predictable. Yeah. And you don't have to let the ferment sit with the tea bags. You could also make your own tea and blend to taste to get the exact way. But overnight,
overnight and cold, you know, during cold crash. I mean, they were only exposed to that tea for probably 12 to 14 hours, I would say. Yeah. And it was the perfect amount of time. I think the alcohol in the cider, even though it was low alcohol, turned out to be around 3.6%.
It extracted the flavors.
Yeah.
And the cranberry, man, it's awesome. It brought a tartness to it. It really was crushing.
Yeah.
Even though we want more of it.
It's true. More cranberry, that is. Anyway, I think those are 2 really nice ciders that are very easy and quick to do for this fall season. Both of them would be great with Thanksgiving dinner or any time. I particularly like them because they're low ABV. And, you know, if I'm at home working at night or, you know, doing something productive like I've been sewing lately or embroidering a lot of detail-oriented stuff, you know, a nice 3.6% sipper is the way to go.
And these taste of fall.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So start making your Thanksgiving stuff now.
Yep. Or, you know, you can wait till 5 days before. It's okay.
Well, happy Halloween, everybody. Is there anything more from the peanut gallery here?
Stay safe out there.
Stay safe. Don't take candy from strangers. Happy Halloween. Foment about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.